B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Final hour, Felger and Mass, coming up on 5:04 in the afternoon on Monday, April 6th. Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub, and the simulcast on NBC Sports Boston, brought to you by DraftKings, as always. Catch us on the apps as well, 98.5, The Sports Hub app and 98.5thesportshub.com. We talked about this earlier, just sort of reset it, the return of sports and when we're going to see it. Donald Trump keeps pushing for it, which I'm glad he is, and I don't think it's wrong for him to push for sports to get back and business to get back. There's nothing wrong with planning, pushing, trying to make that happen. The only thing that would be wrong is if you come back when you're not supposed to, or come back before you're supposed to, or come back and put people at risk or take resources away from people who need it. That would be a mistake. But that has not happened yet. The only thing that has happened is talking about it, planning it, pushing it. And I think he should push. And I think we should push. And if it's safe to do it, then we do it. And if it's not, then don't. I think the only time to get outraged is if you come back too early. Like, if they came back now, I mean, people, I think some people get upset. Like, it acts like, you know, it's almost Maz like people think Trump or others are saying, let's come back now. I mean, no one's saying that, right? So it's like, it would be inappropriate if we came back now, but there's nothing wrong with talking about coming back now.
No, so look, I think people misinterpret it when they hear us. Because, again, I'm sure your email box fills up like mine. Like, how could you possibly suggest that games should be played, you know, while people are dying all over the world, and the world is struggling to cope with this thing? And that's not what anybody's saying at all. What we are saying is that if we can get to a point where this thing feels like it's a little more under control, or a lot more under control, and you can get the athletes back onto the floor or in the arena or on the field and play in a controlled environment where they can be tested, that it would benefit everybody. And so on multiple levels. And so to me, that's really what the crux of the matter is when can we start to regain parts of our lives and the things that distract us and make us happy, the things we enjoy. And so to me, I don't think it's wrong to, you know, to put some emphasis on those things in the longer term. And that's what we're talking about.
They should. Yeah. You're still going to get your stiffs and uppities out there that think that sports are for the lowest common denominator. And to those people, they can screw. You can write your whiny think piece wherever, or, you know, bitch about it on Twitter. And the rest of us, you know, will hopefully sooner than later get to tune in to what actually brings us some pleasure. And I also think it's good for the community, like Maz has said, like the greater community.
There's that, but it's also business.
Right.
It's also industry. And those things do have to come back. And if they can come back, they should come back. And you should be pushing to come back as soon as possible, as soon as safely possible. And there's, again, nothing wrong with that. And so I'm glad there's this push. The only thing I wish is that Trump's sort of aggressiveness and optimism coming out of Saturday's call with the commissioners was echoed elsewhere. Like, if there was a commissioner that came out and said, yeah, after getting on that call and talking through some things, we're optimistic that we have a shot to do this. Or at the very least a report, you know, according to sources who were briefed on the contents of the call, these commissioners believe that they can do X, Y, and Z. You know, I haven't heard any of that, which is, you know, to really give it some credence and to think that there was a momentum towards it, I think I would have heard that, and I haven't. So that's disappointing, but I don't blame them for trying. And the more I think of it, Maz, the more the real push to me is getting these games on in, what I call glorified TV studios. And the fans in the stands, how that's just, boy, I think we're a ways from fans in the stands. Before I read the Wall Street Journal piece, you have a thought?
Well, look, the more this goes on, I think we all realize that it's going to, we all thought it was going to be a while when this thing started, and now I think we all realize it's going to be a lot longer. And so, because there's a healing that goes on here, and I don't mean that just physically, I also mean psychologically and otherwise, where people have to feel safe going back and doing the things that they were doing before. And Mike, if we're talking about, you know, in some ways, you want to compare this to you know, obviously people have compared it to the Spanish flu in the early 1900s, but to polio or things of the like. The only way that those problems get mitigated or solved is when vaccines are ultimately introduced. And so people are always going to worry about this now because the short-term damage from this thing was so extensive and still is that people are traumatized by it. It's going to take a while to recover from that.
Vaccines, treatment. Some sort of breakthrough testing that's widely available, cheap, instant. That's what it's going to take. That's what it's going to take for fans back in the stands. And that might be the very last thing that comes back, the very last thing in all of society. I mean, the first thing that comes back is us at work. Like, and I mean us in the studio there in Dorchester. I mean all of us back at our jobs. That's one. Schools, colleges, you know, government building, all those things, they've got to come back. Bars, restaurants, you know, those have to open. And then I think you talk about 20,000 people in an arena. So that we're a long way away from that. But could we be closer to a closed environment, no fans in the stands kind of thing? And that's what, you know, that's, I know that's a half measure, but I'm still rooting for it. But the fans in the stands, so the Wall Street Journal wrote over the weekend, the big question for sports: when will you feel safe around 20,000 strangers again? They write that sports will be back. At some point in the possibly distant future, athletes will head back to work in arenas, ballparks, and stadiums, and leagues will promise a return to normalcy. There will finally be something to watch on television again. But there are some people who might not be ready so quickly. The fans. They say sports will only be normal once the public decides it's socially and psychologically acceptable to be around thousands of strangers again. The coronavirus has caused so much damage and behaves so unpredictably that major events are canceled deep into the summer. It's no longer a given that play will resume this year. Quote, this is from Bill Gates, who has been ahead of the pandemic thing for a long time. Quote, until you're widely vaccinated, those may not come back at all. So again, Gates is saying those public gatherings, those mass public gatherings, until there's a vaccine or treatment or certainly, you know, testing, they're not coming back. This journal writes that President Trump told the commissioners of sports leagues on Saturday that he wants fans at games soon, very soon. I want fans back in the arenas, Trump said, and the fans want to be back too. But the primary challenge for the business is not a political or financial one. It's behavioral, right, Maz? It's like, you know, I mentioned this before. I don't know if you go out and walks in your neighborhood. People are crossing the street. People are crossing the street when you cross someone on the sidewalk. And, you know, so that's just, you don't want to be in close contact with two people, never mind 20,000.
Yeah, look, I think I told you that early last week I went into a grocery store. And I found myself, you know, approaching someone in a shopping aisle, to give you an idea. And I was uncomfortable with them not being all the way over to the other side as I was walking in the opposite direction. And I get within a short distance of someone and I find myself leaning back. I don't want anybody breathing on me. I don't want anyone touching anything that I'm touching. So I think we've all gotten to the point where we're kind of paranoid. And the idea of going into an arena or a crowded space right now, I think scares everybody, and it's going to scare everybody for a while.
So that one, there's no quick fix to that one. You know, even if something, some sort of miracle, you know, happens with, again, a vaccine or a treatment or a breakthrough kind of test, people are still, you know, psychologically going to be leery of going into those spots, even if it's safe, even if it's been proven safe. I think, you know, that's going to be a slow process. And as the journal points out, it's not just because fans will have less disposable income to spend on sports tickets. It's also become clear that the outbreak of the coronavirus in northern Italy was turbocharged by a soccer match in Milan on February 19th. Fans who attended other matches are now wondering if they are sitting on their own time bombs. So, you know, that soccer match, I don't know how many people are aware of it there. You know, that sort of lit the fuse there in Italy. And so I think you got a long way to go on that. Now, is there a middle ground? Is there a middle ground where there's breakthrough testing or treatment and these leagues can get together in closed environments and I keep saying bubble environments and create little TV studios, not arenas, and just play their games amongst themselves on TV? I'm still holding out hope for that. I've kind of am losing hope in the fans in the stands kind of thing for a while.
Well, but Mike, even in that scenario, and you're talking about the bubble scenario now, where you put athletes, officials, you know, teams into these little cocoons and you let them play and you turn on the television cameras and people can enjoy it from the safety of their own family room or sofa. Even then, you still need daily testing. You still need that. Now, one of the things that, and I don't mean this as any sort of political statement, I mean it more from a reality stance. One of the things that I am more flabbergasted by over this thing is how a country with our resources did not have a test for this thing and we weren't ready. I know this is an old story. It's been well documented between us not taking it seriously enough and then the bureaucratic nature of the CDC and everything else had sort of got in the way of testing being available on a more rapid level. But that blew me away. And if we don't have tests in place 3 months from now, then forget it. These leagues can't even play in front of the television cameras. No
exactly.
Shot.
Okay.
No
so-
shot.
Are you going to be offended if in 2-3 months the tests are out, but not everyone gets them, Maz? Not everyone gets them. You and I don't get them, but the NBA and NHL do when they finish out their seasons because they had access to testing and we didn't. Would you be outraged?
No, I wouldn't be outraged, but I'll tell you what, a lot of people will be. And I'll tell you what the danger is with that, Mike, is that we sit here and say, well, there are people who need tests, and those people should get them. And then if we have some left over, then they go to the athletes and they can get on the court. Logically, it makes sense, except for this. There are who knows how many people that have it that don't have the symptoms. And so in theory, you should really be able to test everybody before you allow this, because there's no telling who's walking around with it and infecting other people. This is part of the problem with that soccer game that you mentioned. You had 40 people in this cauldron and then they all went out, some of whom didn't have symptoms, many of whom didn't have symptoms and infected other people without even knowing it. And now you have this massive chain reaction in northern Italy. So the part that people are going to be uncomfortable with is that it is not apparent outwardly who needs a test and who doesn't. That's part of the issue with this.
I would have absolutely no problem with it because I just apply common sense. And someone like Sidney Crosby or LeBron James are infinitely more important than yours truly, so they should get the tests so they can get back to work and entertain me.
I agree. And I don't. And to me, it's not to entertain me. It's to get the gears going again. I mean, Sidney Crosby being back on the ice playing hockey means...
Well, it's great, yeah. For the greater good, it's good.
It means... I'll just make up a number. It means 100 people get to keep their jobs or go to work, whatever. Vendors, hotels around the stadium, bars, restaurants around the stadium. I mean, all those ancillary people whose livelihoods depend on the games being played, they're all back at work if Sidney Crosby's on the ice. So, hell yeah, give him the test before me. But I don't have the coronavirus, I don't think. Knock on wood. I know there's asymptomatic issues out there. But what I'm saying is I don't want them taking tests away from people who need it. But can they take a test away from me? Because, again, knock on wood, I don't think I need it. Yeah, go ahead. Crosby gets the test before me, because when he plays, we all go back to work, and he benefits hundreds of thousands of people and their livelihoods by being back on the ice. So I'm not, the people that pull that, that sort of frustrates me. It's like, no, there's some people who are more important to the economy, and their being back at work should be a priority. And I know it's stupid to say a ball player has that priority, but that's big business and it employs a lot of people and it helps a lot of people when they're back on the field.
Well,
so,
yeah, sorry. I'm just going to say, look, this is obvious, right? Because we sit here and we say, and I think you put it in these terms last week, which is that if you really boil it down, everything is irrelevant other than life and death. So if something is not a life or death matter, then it's easy to discount everything else. But the reality is, as much as this virus has spread exponentially, so has the unemployment rate. It has exploded exponentially here in the last few weeks in particular. And that is something that you just can't ignore. That is, you know, it's really a problem that is requiring this a ping pong type of response where you got to go back and forth from one to the other because you really can't let either one go to hell.
Okay. Any you outrage that Trump or us or anyone else is pushing sports back onto the field? 617-779-0985. Mix it in with your draft and Stidham calls right after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Mike Felger, Tony Maserati, making your afternoon commute better.
Throw some, Felger. How about a mea culpa? You are wrong. Running backs do matter.
Or worse.
Eh, I wouldn't pay him.
A 98.5 to Sports Hub.
Greeny, I wish I had some better news, but the pessimism is really growing. The reality is taking hold, and it's really manifested itself in the talks that the owners are currently having with the players. And the reason they're talking is because they've got to decide to do with the salaries that they have coming due the rest of this calendar year. And the way the owners are negotiating, what they're asking for, is essentially to build a fund that would help shelter the losses for a loss season. I guess you could sum it up by saying they're preparing for the worst, hoping for the best. That doesn't mean that they're going to push the button and say cancel anytime soon, but it's very clear that from a financial standpoint, that's what they're looking at. And the talks that they're having with the players, Greeny, none of them are about restarting. They're all about dealing with the financial situation. It's really depressing. And the thing is, and I know that President Trump had a call with the commissioners over the weekend. I didn't hear anything out of that call. Maybe that was just kept secret about testing. I'm going to say this very clearly. Testing, testing, testing. Forget about fans and arenas. Forget about bubbles. The only way this is happening is with mass testing that is available, political free, where you don't have to worry about taking it away from somebody who needs it, and you can get quick results. Until there's testing, everything that we're talking about here is pie in the sky. Right. That's the reality that has shown us in Asia. That's the reality the NBA has.
Okay, Brian Windhorst, ESPN, not painting a very optimistic picture with the NBA. I get it. Got a text from a friend of ours, Maz, who does work at one of these stadiums.
Yep.
For these games. Says, Mike, if it's an empty stadium, then there are no ushers, concession people, or security needed, so who's going to go back to work? And if the armrest, no fans, then no one is going to go into crowded bars. That would run in opposition to playing games with no fans, and hotels would still be empty except for maybe the teams. Don't get me wrong, I'd love to be able to watch live sports, but it wouldn't send people back to work. So I think testing athletes, while most people still would be without, would be a PR nightmare for the leagues. Excellent point. So going back just on TV would employ some people. I mean, TV techs, cameramen, TV director. You know, again, it'd be a much smaller, you know, group of people for sure. For sure. And you'd have to have send some people back to the stadiums to maintain them, clean them, whatever. I mean, but it pales in comparison to getting those people back in one place. So, I mean, that's a fair point. It's a fair point. At least it's something. At least you're trying to do everything that you can. The PR nightmare is real. I mean, I won't rip them for it, but others will, as you pointed out earlier, Maz.
Well, and look, the other thing, and I think that this is an important thing to recognize, too, that there's big business in television. And so right now, and I think we can speak from experience on this, that part of the problem is fewer people are listening, fewer people are watching, so fewer advertising dollars are being generated. Everybody's getting hit. If you put these games back on TV, I don't know, do some of these companies that produce consumer goods, maybe do they up their advertising again because they have access to the consumer and there are consumers going to grocery stores and buying household items and those sorts of things. So can you get any sort of uptick that way? So it might, you know, it's not necessarily going to be a tangible, visible thing in the arena. But I do think there could be an uptick in just day-to-day behavior and access to the consumer and people then responding to it. I also think there's a feel-good effect to it, Mike.
Yeah.
So I'm a sports person, as are you, as is Murray, as we all are here at this station. So, of course, we value them and we want them back. But I do think that there is a ripple effect that comes from the games being played that puts everybody in a different frame of mind, and I think that can be very valuable.
Yeah, whatever you can do to grind the gears, that's what I would say. But back to your phones, as promised. Steven in Boston. Go ahead, Steven.
Hey, guys. I think that the one of the biggest things that they're looking at here are the asymptomatic people that are not out of the woods, and that is something that I don't know how you overcome that. Those are people that are not feeling any symptoms, yet they are carriers, and that's going to be a major problem moving forward.
Oh, however, it's the problem, Stephen. It's the problem. I'll just cut you off.
Yeah.
It's the problem, because if everyone who has the coronavirus shows a temperature, you take their temperature, and then don't let them in the building, and that solves it. And that's what China started to do, and they thought that was going to be it. And then they realized, nope. No temperature, no other outward signs, no symptoms, and they still have it, and they're caring, and they're transmitting. And so now what do we do? And so without testing, forget about it.
Oh, look, it's impossible because it's affecting people differently. It's not as if every person who gets this is reacting the same way, depending on an assortment of factors, and that makes it really complicated. So, look, Mike, you know, you want to have a kid now, you can undergo genetic testing and find out, is your child going to be predisposed to certain types of illnesses and defects that, you know, you would otherwise never have known about? In this case, we can't do any of that. Nothing. There's no preventative measure to know, really, other than outward symptoms, which sometimes are also wrong, by the way. There's just no way to know who has it and who doesn't.
Paul and Blackstone on the Patriots quarterback situation. Hi, Paul. Go ahead, please.
Hey, guys. So talking about the comments that Brady made and the way you were talking about he's tired of Belichick's routine, wants to go with the coaches, not afraid to go out and booze. You know what that reminds me of, what I drew a parallel to? You remember when things went south with Parcells and the Patriots, and they replaced him with Pete Carroll, and how Bledsoe was butting heads with Parcells, didn't like the disciplinarian, and they talked about how Pete Carroll wasn't afraid to come in and give a guy a pat on the ass and say, hey, good job, man, that kind of thing, and how it was all sunshine and rainbows at the start of that first season, and then after 3 years, Carroll got fired. I wonder if there's some of that, and maybe it's not a deal with Brady because he's, you know, going to be 43 years old, but if that act would wear thin with him after a couple of years when, you know, the party boy, win or lose, we booze kind of thing goes to the side, and you get tired of losing with Bruce Arians, and you miss what you don't have.
Sure, that's what the Patriots think is going to happen, and there's sources close to the situation, and this, you know, the Ian O'Connor story over the weekend and others that we read leading into it, there was this constant drumbeat of some sources that are talking off the record saying, once Brady gets there, he's going to realize it's not for him. He's not going to like the culture down there. He's used to a certain way, and he's a workaholic too. And when he gets down there and Bruce Arians wants to cut out and play nine holes on a Wednesday afternoon, he ain't going to like it. And we'll see. We'll see. I do know there's more than one way to skin a cat. You can win Parcells' way, Belichick's way, or you can win Pete Carroll's way. I tend to think that the Parcells-Belichick way wins a little bit more consistently. Mitch is in Spencer on the Return of Sports. Go ahead, Mitch.
All right, so a couple things about the going back to sports once we have enough tests for X number of people. The issue with that is always going to be, one, there's not going to be enough tests for everyone until there are enough tests for everyone, right? You can't just test a handful of people and say, okay, we're good, and then have people go to the stadium. Because even if you just do essential personnel, it's trainers, it's people that set up the locker room, people that do the seats. There's hundreds of people per stadium, even thousands, that are going to be an issue. Secondarily, if this continues to surge like it seems like it's going to on all the, you know, different metrics that they use, a lot of places, like in Worcester, they're turning stadiums into de facto medical tents.
That's right.
So they're going to need to clean those places out. That's going to be a huge step to it. So they're going to have to clean up, one, the area that they're going to play in. Two, they're going to have to check every single player. And three, they're going to have to check everyone who comes in contact with those players. And until that happens, there's really no way to get back to normalcy.
I would agree. Got to be some sort of breakthrough test, breakthrough vaccine. And, I mean, that's just what has to happen. And maybe it comes quickly. Maybe someone catches lightning in a bottle, gets lucky, or is just brilliant and hits on it and gets it. And as quickly as this thing went bad, we can turn it right back around. I don't know how realistic that is, but maybe that happens. And if that does happen, you've done, in the meantime, this whole push and this whole plan and all this talk to try and get ready and hope that it's ready. And so this is, once again, I say, I don't think there's anything wrong with pushing these leagues back. And if it's not ready, it's not ready. The only thing wrong would be bringing them back before you're ready. And that hasn't happened yet, and I don't feel like we're close, Maz.
Well, Mike, look, the trick is, if and when it does happen, you have to be ready to capitalize on it, right? So the other thing is, what else do they have to do? It's not like they're playing games right now. So but they should expend their energy in putting together a plan to allow this thing to happen if and when the opportunity presents itself. That's the right way to go about it. What I'm concerned about with the testing, I mean, it feels like we have tests, okay? We have tests. Some of them aren't fast enough, although, again, this one that we talked about last week allegedly can turn out a positive result within 5 minutes in some cases. I just wonder, how quickly can they produce them? And because you're talking about a country of over 300 million people, in our case, in a world of 8 billion, realistically, how many can you test in a day and how many can you manufacture in a short period of time?
More from Trump on Saturday after his talk with the commissioners after Murray's update.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Colin Coward of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Maz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Maz.
A great show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Reopening. Can you talk about your call with the sports commissioners? Did you say you'd like to see people back, fans back in arenas in
August? Absolutely.
I want
fans back in the arenas. Whenever we're ready. I mean, as soon as we can, obviously. And the fans want to be back, too. You know, they want to see basketball and baseball and football and hockey. They want to see their sports. They want to go out onto the golf courses and breathe nice, clean, beautiful, fresh air. No, the
fans.
I can't tell you a date, but I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. But and, you know, we're not going to have separation for the rest of our times on the planet. We need it for this period of time, but eventually people are going to be able to occupy those seats in arenas next to each other, like we have for all of my life and all of your life. They want to sit next to each other at restaurants. They don't want to be, you know, 6 feet away. And some restaurant man called up. He said, "Yeah, I'm worried because I have a small restaurant with not too many seats." I think he said 120. And he said, "If I practice what this is, I'm down to 30 seats. I can't make it." I said, "Don't worry about it. That's for a short period of time. You'll be back to your number of seats." We can't do that. Otherwise, you're making everything. That means your stadium is half the size of what it was a month ago. No. They're going to be close together, but they're going to be breathing air that's not infected, that's not going to kill people. Please.
All right, again, that was Trump on Saturday. I lost my Skype feed here for a second. We'll get it back up. Felger and Maz on remote. Big Jim Murray in our Town for Tire Studios. I told you, I get my head examined. Or maybe this is just the times. But I was, well, because I guess I'm just so obsessed with the show. and work and trying to find stuff for work, I heard that Trump was having that call with the sports commissioners on Saturday, and I thought he'd be talking about it on his Saturday briefing. So I watched the full, like, it was an hour and freaking 45 minutes. It was an hour and 45 minutes he was up there in that little press room in D.C. at the White House with Fauci and Ricks, and there's one more guy. There's like a team of guys up there. Pence was there with them. They were there for an hour and 45 minutes, and I damn near listened to that entire thing. It's unbelievable, Maz. You ever sit through and watch a whole Trump press conference?
No, I can't say that I have. I've watched chunks of it, but never a whole thing. And look, I'll tell you that in this particular case, I thought his answer there was pretty heartfelt and pretty articulate and poignant, frankly. I thought he put it pretty well that, hey, we want to get back into these arenas. This is what we do. And we want to be able to go into restaurants and go to concerts and sit at a table less than 6 feet from someone without having to completely freak out about it, because we've all been in restaurants like that where the tables are all jammed together. And I'm not telling you I like it, but again, I never before used to sit in those places and worry about it. And so I thought his answer there was pretty good. And I'm a sports person, so I obviously have a bias, but I also believe in things that can bring a community together, and I think sports are one of them, or
okay,
some of them.
So also his point, and he's made this several times, and he's getting hammered for it, but I don't think he should be, and that is the whole thing about the cure can't be worse than the disease. And the problem is with him, he's so polarizing. And, you know, he's so attack-oriented and spent so much time attacking the other side and attacking people that don't share his worldview that no one's going to come around. Like, I don't think he's not a unifying presence, and he's not going to bring people together. It's not his whole thing is to, you know, sort of energize his side of it and win on that front. And he has. It's a good strategy for him, and it works. So I don't trust his ability to bring people together and get people to understand what he's trying to say. But what he's trying to say is it makes sense in that, you know, if the cure is worse than the disease, I'm not just talking, Maz, about, you know, you have to weigh economic hardship versus life and death. Yeah. In that case, there's no argument, right? Like, I mean, you choose life and death over economic hardship any day. But if economic hardship becomes to such a degree that it causes a loss of life, then I think that's worth considering. And I think it does reach that point. In other words, if we have a depression, if we have a full-blown depression, you know, a massive economic recession that costs people jobs, their livelihood, their health insurance, people's life savings, people's savings that they have saving and been squirreling away to take care of themselves late on in life, and they lose that money, they lose their funds. Crime goes up, homelessness goes up. If all those things occur, there's going to be a loss of life, right?
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's suicides, addiction numbers will go up. Like, all of that will get infinitely worse the longer that's prolonged.
So there's going to be, if there's a massive depression, massive recession, there's going to be a loss of life because of it. It's going to be hard to quantify, right? It's not going to be as black and white as someone dying from a virus, but it's going to exist. And so if you kill the economy to such a point that people are losing their lives on that end, well, there's a balance there. And there's an intellectual, actual argument and discussion to be had there. I fear he's not the one to deliver it because he's just too polarizing.
Well, look, I mean, again, all political leanings aside, he's not the one to be delivering anything, because his just the way he expresses himself is combative. So regardless of what the hell he's saying or which side you're on, he's picking a fight all the time. It doesn't matter what the topic is. It's his nature. But Mike, with regard to unemployment and the ramifications and financial stress that it can have on people, do never underestimate what stress can do to a person's health.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, that is, those are real, real factors.
I'm sorry to cut you off, Maz. I do want to get to, can I play some more Trump sound from this thing on Saturday? Because I end up listening to the effing thing for an hour and a half, and I found myself at some points laughing out loud, and I'm not really, like, mocking him before you all get bent out of shape out there and start emailing me. I find him entertaining, and there were just some points I just found myself laughing out loud. Can I give you one more thing that I agree with him on, though, by the way? The handshake. You know, he was never a big handshake guy. And I think he's sort of like some of us are like, a, you know, here's an I told you so moment. Here's Trump on no more handshaking.
And some good things have happened. I mean, I don't know. You know, there's one habit that, as you know, most of you, a lot of you have covered me a long time before I did this. I was never a big believer in shaking hands. But I decided if you don't shake hands, you're not going to be winning a lot of contests. Right now, I'm not sure you have to shake hands anymore. A couple of people have told me, Debbie, you told me, that if we didn't shake hands, the incidence of flu's a big deal also, and that flu might be cut down in half. Who knew that shaking hands was such a bad thing? I felt it. I mean, I always felt it. And, you know, I was never to a point where I can't shake somebody's hand. I knew people like that, too, but there weren't too many of them. But when I ran for office, all of a sudden I'm shaking hundreds of hands. And if I don't, I wouldn't even be standing here. But I think that's a custom that maybe people don't have to. We have to get close together. We have to sit together at the stadiums. We have to sit next to each other and wrestle. All that stuff is going to happen. But I think the concept of shaking hands maybe is something that's going to be a little bit from the past. Let's see what happens. Maybe they'll go right back to shaking hands.
Okay, I guess the way he delivers it, but amen to that. The handshake, that time may have come and passed, the handshake. Then there was a thing, like, I noticed when I listened to the whole press conference, he gets stuck on a word, and he'll, like, hammer the word. The word here is whistleblower, so he got asked about the, you know, he fired the inspector general that blew the whistle on him for the impeachment, all this blah, blah, like, I don't care about the story itself. But just so, like, in the middle of the pandemic press conference, he got outraged about the inspector general thing. And listen to how he goes off on the whistleblower thing. Go ahead.
Jimmy. Dishonest Democrats impeached a president of the United States. That man is a disgrace to IGs. All right, let's go next, please. He's a total disgrace.
Did you run by your decision to dismiss the inspector general by Senator?
We'll get off this because people want to talk about what we're talking about. But let me just tell you something. That's my decision. I have the absolute right. Even the fake news last night said he has the absolute right to do it. But ask him, why didn't you go and see the actual conversation? There was no rush. He said, oh, we have to rush it. He even said it was politically biased. He actually said that. The report could have been, you know who the whistleblower is, and so do you, and so does everybody in this room, and so do I. Everybody knows, but they give this whistleblower a status that he doesn't deserve. He's a fake whistleblower. And frankly, somebody ought to sue his ass off. All right, it's enough of the whistleblower.
I heard that one, and I laughed my ass off. Like, so there's a thing where, like, yeah, whistleblower, and then if he doesn't agree with you or like you, it's a fake whistleblower. I heard fake whistleblower. I spat out my cornflakes or whatever I was eating at the time. Like, that's brilliant. Fake whistleblower. Then he got fixated on this whistleblower thing, fake whistleblower. The next question was about Cuomo and not giving him ventilators. The next question was about ventilators. And
I'd rather have the referees blow the whistles.
Well, he couldn't help himself. Go ahead, Jimmy.
What he didn't say is, okay, let me tell you what he didn't say. Two very good friends of mine brought him those. Ventilators, right?
Yeah, ventilators. No, not whistleblowers. He got stuck on the whistleblower thing. It's a fake whistleblower. And then just one more thing. Like this, maybe a couple more things made me laugh. I'm sorry. Just indulge me. Like this I found out about him and all these Republicans that email me, you are the thinnest skinned people ever. Like, Maz, we deal with so many sensitive sports fans, Boston College fans, Green Teamers, Patriots fans. These wing nuts, oh my God, they can't take anything. Like, it's just, they can't take anything. And Trump is, like, obsessed with this. After becoming president basically by attacking everybody else, if you don't kiss his ass, like, so listen to this. Here he goes off about governors and mayors or maybe just Cuomo not thanking him for the ventilators or something, this gracious thing? Go ahead, Jimmy, give me four.
We have given the governor of New York more than anybody has ever been given in a long time. I'll just say, I was going to say in history, but in a long time. And I think he's happy. But I think that, because I watched what he said today, and it was fine. I wouldn't say gracious. It wasn't gracious. It was okay. I must tell you, Gavin Newsom has been gracious. Los Angeles, California, the job we've done, and all of California.
Why does that matter if they're gracious or not gracious?
It doesn't matter. Problems. It doesn't matter. But I think when we've given as much as we've given to New York, somebody should say, nice. I'll tell you who's been very nice. Mayor de Blasio has been very nice. He understands what we've given him. We brought him some more ventilators, too, yesterday. But nobody has been given like New York. And I think, I know he appreciates it. He just can't quite get the words out, but that's okay.
I found myself like enraptured for an hour and a half with this guy.
See, but this is the kind of stuff that, again, gets people agitated because it's not focusing on the task. It's worried about the trimmings that go along with it and who's grateful to me and
exactly.
who's not grateful to me. So aside from, and again, take the politics out of it. I just think he gets easily tugged off the line, man. He cannot stay focused on what the task is and just do the right thing.
Yeah, so maybe that's it. It's like, this is... Dude, we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Exactly.
Like, what? Who cares if the guy's gracious or like? But you know, he does. He gets off, man. Can I just give you one more? So he was up there. I was impressed. Like, he's no spring chicken. He's up there for an hour and 45 minutes, taking question after question after question. And then towards the end, he did. He got a little annoyed that he was still there. Give me five, Jimmy.
You guys ever stop? You want to keep going for a little while? Huh? I mean, do you ever stop? How many times you ask? And in many cases, it's the same. Actually, a lot of good questions. Go ahead. But keep going, yes?
Yes, sir.
So you're not going to blame me that I kept it going too long? People said, oh, we kept it. Every time you'll ask it. No, I mean, no, it's amazing. Tony, every hand went up. I thought we'd gone through the room. I think every single hand went up the last time. You know what it shows you? It shows you that you love what you do. Go ahead.
We do love what we do.
You do. No, you do. And some of you do it well. Not all of you. Go ahead. I'm not looking at you, by the way.
So, like, I sort of found that fun. I liked it. I found that good, the little back and forth at the presser. But I don't know. I spent the time listening to it. I picked out cuts because I just can't help myself to not pick out cuts. So thank you for indulging me. And you can save all your hate mail. I'm not really ripping them. I just... It was an entertaining watch. That's all. I don't know what the point there is. Final word comes your way next.
Tugger Mass. Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5. The Sports Hub.
Please. BackstageCountry.com. Your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Here. The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word brought to you by Town Fair Tire. If you're looking for the best deal on tires, there's only one place to go. That's Town Fair Tire. The best prices and great free services.
Nobody
beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody.
Nobody.
All right, one piece of sound to get to. The annual chucking of the markers started today, otherwise known as making the uninformed Patriots draft selections on the Felger and Maz Big Board, which we love to do. We'll continue to do this leading up to the draft. And one of today's selections, a guard out of Michigan with a certain attribute or maybe affliction when it comes to his hands.
Kevin Hansen, Sports Illustrated, has the Patriots taking A.J. Epinesa?
Iowa.
Defensive end out of Iowa. A.J. Epinesa, and you know me and these names. It's a adventure every time. Sports Illustrated of Epinesa says, while not a speed rusher, Epinesa could remind Bill Belichick of one of his former players, Trey Flowers. The former Hawkeye wins with a blend of power, length, technique, and heavy hands, Maz. Heavy hand? What the hell does that mean? He's got heavy hands.
Well, it means he's very overbearing to people.
He's heavy-handed.
Yeah, he's a
heavy hands. That's a new one. Heavy hands. F out of here with that. Heavy hands. What does that mean? God, these magazines. This is normally why we mock the mock drafts and we mock pre-draft analysis. This year, we're going to have to embrace it because we have, you know. Again, for obvious.
Does it say anything about his ass? Like, I'd prefer if it said heavy-handed and fat ass.
Oh, but these freaking heavy hands. Get the F. Yeah, we took him in the first round because he's got heavy hands. F you. Seriously, these draft analysis. Oh, God, normally I'd crap all over this stuff. This year we need it. It's true. Tell me about the heavy hands all day long, baby.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.